new themes, they're saying, of these new anti-systemic movements, anti-authoritarian. Continuing, their almost simultaneous occurrence can largely be traced to the fact that the movements of the late 60s, 1960s, were precipitated by a common catalyst, the escalation of the anti-imperialist war in Vietnam. This escalation posed an immediate threat to the established patterns of life and to the very lives not only of the Vietnamese, but of American youth as well. And the war posed a clear threat to the security of the Chinese people. As for European youth and workers, while no immediate threat was posed to their lives and security, the indirect effects of the escalation, world monetary crisis, intensification of market competition, and so on, and the ideological spillovers from the movements in the United States, from the Cultural Revolution in China, and from the struggle of the Vietnamese people soon provided enough reasons and rationalizations for rebellion. Taken together, all these movements and their Vietnamese epicenter were important in disclosing a basic asymmetry in the power of systemic and anti-systemic forces on a world scale. And my interjection, that word symmetry sent me off into deep thinking. It took me to a number of different places. To use it in this description of the growth and extension of our global resistance suggests a Hegelian influence is my first stop along the way, a notion touched on in our earlier Wallerstein readings, a section in his chapter of Does Capitalism Have a Future called Capitalism During Its Phase of Normal Operation, argued that normally, quote unquote, the world system achieves a kind of equilibrium, quote from that section. What is meant, and this is Emmanuel Wallerstein, what is meant by hegemony in a world economy is the ability of one state to impose a set of rules on the operation of all other states, such that there is relative order in the world system. The importance of relative order is something on which Schumpeter insisted in his theorizing. Disorders, interstate and intrastate civil wars, mafiosi, protection rackets, extension official and institutional corruption, rampant petty crime, are all profitable to small sectors of the world's population, but they all hinder this. Why do they keep occurring? Why are they so predominant? Why are they the dominant theme of our brothers and sisters in the so-called periphery are experiencing? I'm sorry. Continuing. But they all hinder the global search for maximizing the accumulation of capital. Indeed, they bring about the destruction of much infrastructure necessary for the maintenance and expansion of capitalist accumulation. My interjection, we're seeing, I'm hoping, where this theory falls short, in what ways it ceases to help us. Continuing. In what ways it's wrong, misguided. Continuing. It follows that the imposition of relative order by a hegemonic power is a positive benefit for the normal, quote unquote, operation of the capitalist system as a whole. It is also of great benefit to the hegemonic power itself, its state, its entrepreneurs, its ordinary citizens. There is reason to doubt that the benefits to the system as a whole and to the hegemonic power also bring in their wake a benefit to other states and their enterprises and citizens. Therein lays the tension and the explanation of why achieving and maintaining hegemony is so difficult and so rare. Unquote from Emmanuel Wallerstein, from his chapter in Does Capitalism Have a Future, titled Structural Crisis or Why Capitalists May No Longer Find Capitalism Rewarding. Now, there seems to be an ambivalence here, not present 30 years prior. Recall, he along with Terence K. Hopkins and Giovanni Arrighi, the three of them together, wrote Anti-Systemic Movements. There seems to be an ambivalence here not present 30 years prior, when he and his co-authors wrote, quote, opposition to oppression is coterminous with the existence of hierarchical social systems. Opposition is permanent, but for the most part, latent, unquote. Now, asymmetry presupposes symmetry, step-by-step correspondence, i.e. that we are an effect of power's action. And while it's certainly true that power has ever, since class's onset, been strenuously endeavoring to shape us, make us be what it needs to accomplish its variously defined over the ages, but all a specie of the same arrogance, its quote-unquote greatness. While certainly this is so, there is a missing factor which only we the people can add, our earth-given knowledge of freedom, which never leaves us. Opposition will be continuous. Now that's straightforward and clear. It's clearly true. We need no proof. We know it in our bodies. And yet, treatises will flow. There will be oceans of deserts of theories. There will be endless dissertations on them. And so, clarity was let go because the incentives were so generous. Surely, he must know that there's absolutely nothing natural in that order he seems to approve. And that order is a pleasant word for force. That coercion's both a fine web and a tank that mows us down. This is Earth speak. We will resist. We continue to resist. We will resist some more. So wither, dry husk blown to the wind, your phony scientific theories, your social algorithms. Get you hence, you calculating cons. Get you gone. How dare you reduce the intricate web of our thought process, the sighing of our infinite hearts, to postulates and raw data to be polished smooth. How dare you take the mystery and magic of the subtle interweavings of our myriad experiences in multiple translations, both in fluid memory and real time. The world of logic systems is an invented world, elaborate and well organized. There's much to master, much to digest, much to offer in placation, that abyss where was your soul. Where was your soul?